This morning, we're privileged to have Jim McDaniel with us in our Studio B here in the Instructional Media Center. I'm Martin Schmidt, the director of the Instructional Media Center here at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Jim wants to share with us something of his experience, having attended a couple of days at the National Black History Convention and Study Conference, which I understand is really a first here. Is that true, Jim?
Right, correct. It's the first time that this conference has ever been attempted, to my knowledge, on this grand scale by anyone. It's the programmer, as well as the convener of the conference, is the Reverend Alan Winbush. He is a pastor here at one of the local St. Louis churches, and one of his dreams was to form a conference like this, where St. Louis would be the hub for starting a conference that would go into study as well as display of black history and art and music.
Maybe at this point, Jim, before we get into discussing the conference itself, we ought to ask a little bit about you, what you're doing now, what brings you to St. Louis so that you might participate in this particular conference.
Okay. I am a vicar at Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Minneapolis with the Pastor Alton Wadle, as well as a campus minister vicar at Concordia College, St. Paul, Minnesota. My vicarage is quite unusual than your normal vicarage because it primarily works with the minorities. My job primarily works with minority students as well as working with married students at the campus. I have really enjoyed a very blessed vicarage this year and have done tremendous things up there, and I'm very happy to have the opportunity to minister to these college students as well as to the parishioners at Mount Olive Lutheran Church.
Jim, are you married yourself?
Yes, I have been married since July of 1973, and I'm very happy with my lovely wife, Susan.
Great. Good.
Let me first explain how I heard about the conference. I was in St. Louis about a month or two ago doing some independence. I'm doing an independent study in new methods and means to develop black ministries. The research project includes such things as attending workshops and making a workshop, which I just completed doing at Concordia College St. Paul last week from February 2nd through 7th, as well as readings and writing papers and things of that nature. And one of the things that I wanted to do was attend a conference like this, because you can always pick up new ideas and observe how other people how other people handle black history, as well as meet some very interesting people in the field of history of the black Americans.
Mm-hmm. I just wondered who put you wise to the conference going on here at St. Louis?
The letter was first received by the president's office, Dr. Ralph Bowman, and when I was in his office visiting with him, he showed me the letter and asked me if I was interested in attending, and I said yes, I would, but I would have to check my calendar because a vicar's time is not always his own.
That's so true.
After getting clearances from my bishops in the Twin Cities, I wrote him a letter and told him I would be willing to attend, and he saw to it that funds were made available for my attendance of this conference.
All right. What were some of your first impressions as you sat into this conference?
Well, I got there Monday morning. Knowing a little bit about some of the people who planned it, and basically it was Reverend Alan Winbush, I do know that he did send out 7,000 letters to people all across the country. But when I got there that morning, only 7 people had registered. And I was very much just upset about that, because knowing what the program and the speakers who were attending and presenting papers were of very high caliber, I was just quite surprised that not many people took advantage of this program. That was my first impression. And I got a little disheartened too until I attended the first session. And the first session, which dealt with the black church in America, went very well and gave a new refreshing perspective, at least in my thinking, of the black church and its past history as well as its future history in America. So even though the numbers were small, the speakers as well as the convener, Reverend Alan Winbush, did an excellent job in going on with the program as scheduled.
Well, were there some late registrants that came later on?
Yes, there were a few late registrants that came in, and I think by the time I left last night, the number had crossed the 50 mark.
Oh, good.
It was, when I say 50, I mean, let me say that it had received good coverage in the news media, both on Channel 5 as well as Channel 4 in the St. Louis area. The evening sessions were very well attended. For example, they had an evening session Sunday night where it was really the kickoff for this convention, where they had somewhere between 350 and 400 participants at a dinner banquet gala evening at the Jefferson Hotel. And also the evening events on Monday night and Tuesday night. Monday night being the event on Black Presence in Art, as well as the Institute on Equal Opportunity, where there were over 200 people there in attendance. So in the evening events, there were quite a few people attending, but for the most part, during the day, it was very slim. But the caliber of the program did not reflect the number of people who attended.
Well, here we are. It's getting close to noon on Wednesday, February 12th. Jim, were you able to take in any of this morning's sessions?
No, I was not. I'm sorry to say I didn't get a chance to, because of other arrangements and getting this taping session. For this taping, I couldn't make it for any of the morning sessions. But however, I did meet Ronald Hill yesterday, who is the program director of the Youth in the United States of America Health Centers, and talked to him about the grave, or the program he is held of, which is the sickle cell program.
Mm-hmm.
Sickle cell disease is a very killing disease, particularly toward blacks, and yet it has not received that much funding from the federal government. Researching is just now beginning to be done in this disease, which affects about one out of every seven black American. And his job, after talking to him, he is primarily trying to get more funds, as well as to make people aware of, particularly black people, since it primarily affects them, to take the test, which is quite painless and will help you discover whether or not you could be a carrier of sickle cell or even have the disease.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that most of Wednesday then is devoted to the health of the black person. Is that
right? New concepts in healthcare and delivery systems.
Yes.
As we know, even though this country has a terrific birth rate or low infant mortality rate, between the blacks and the Indians, Americans in this country, the rate is still horribly low, and it's primarily due to health care and prenatal care for the mothers and malnutrition that the health care is that low. So this morning's workshop, in fact the whole day's workshop, will be primarily spent on developing new concepts in health care, new programs that are coming out in this field to help black Americans or minority third world people better take care of themselves and have the hospitals and community clinics meet their needs.
Yes. I noticed then also going on to Thursday, tomorrow there'll be a discussion on cancer.
Right.
And I suppose again with particular reference to the black person.
Right.
You say?
Also, if you will notice on the 11:50 on February the 12th, that's this afternoon at 11:50.
Yes.
There will be a topic on racism as it relates to health quality and care.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are surprised to find out, for example, that there are not that many black doctors who are entering into med school, even though med schools are full to capacity. And that, believe it or not, that 14% of the doctors in this country are foreign doctors.
Is that right?
That these doctors are coming in from foreign countries and yet are not required under the law to pass local state medical boards, but yet because of their foreign visas, they are permitted to practice medicine. That's a problem which the medical schools have been having for quite a few years, and if it continues on this way, we will probably have almost something like 30% of the doctors in this country will be of foreign origin.
Jim, may I just interrupt here? I knew many people were coming from other lands to get their medical training and maybe their initial experience. I didn't realize they were actually setting out their shingles and practicing in this country. You say that's...
Yes, we're practicing not so much private practice, although that is increasing now, but primarily in hospitals.
Yes.
As interns, residents, and even on staff, because they're on a different pay scale, number one. The hospitals can pay these men lower salaries,
right,
because they do not need to take state requirements, depending on what state you're in. But for the most part, only, I would say, about, just a rough guess, about 5% of the state requires that these doctors be equal to these United States citizen doctors.
And you would say that these foreign doctors or students seem to be given preference over the American blacks as far as the medical training is concerned?
Not just American blacks, but American students
in
general, because these doctors are taking up space that could be used for students who are interested in studying medicine.
Yes.
So that's one of the problems in which it comes out as far as racism is concerned. It's like a revert racism,
mm-hmm,
in the sense that it's a national racism, because people,
right,
in this country,
right,
who, you know, would like to spend time in medical schools here cannot get into medical schools because, for the most part, the space is being taken up by foreign students.
All right. As I said, Thursday, I noticed there's a study of cancer, Look for Answers. Discussion on the heart in the afternoon, so that too seems to be given to health problems and challenges. And then Friday, I noticed the whole program concerns the black woman and her situation. Various institutes, the last page, a black woman in education, law, the family, communication, business, community development, politics, religion, science, and medicine. A very full program.
Yes.
Will you be able to take part in the rest of these sessions now?
No, I will not. I'm sorry to say, because of this being Ash Wednesday, I will have to be back in the Twin Cities for this evening's services. But I'm very happy that I was able to attend the first 2 days of the convention and workshops, which were held Monday, February 10th, and Tuesday, February the 11th. The first
yes,
institute, which was held on Monday, was the Black Church in America.
Mm-hmm.
The speaker was the Reverend Benjamin Carroll, who's pastor of the First Baptist Church in St. Louis, as well as the Reverend Paul Smith of Washington University and the Assistant Vice Chancellor of Campus Affairs. And then later on, the Reverend Luther E. Smith, Jr., who is the Executive Coordinator of Education for Black Urban Ministries at Eden Seminary. These gentlemen presented a very fine program in talking about how the black church in America, and let me first explain what is the black church in America.
All right.
A lot of people might assume that when we talk about a black church that we're speaking of one denomination. Some people might even say that it's similar to a Baptist, Episcopal, whatever, put
yes,
in a denominational fold and say, well, it's a black church. Well, that's not necessarily the case. In fact, it is not the case. The black church is across denominational lines. It affects Roman Catholics, Lutherans, Baptists, Presbyterian, Pentecost, what have you. The only criteria for membership into the black church, I would say, would be baptism, because baptism is the means that binds us together as a church under Jesus Christ. So there are several groups, one major group in particular that has tried to unify the black church is entitled the National Committee on Black Churchmen, NCBC is entitled. And again, this past fall, I had the opportunity to attend its annual convention in Seattle, Washington. The black church is primarily concerned about the needs of blacks, both in the church as well as outside the church, and ministering to all. Let me also say, when we speak of a black church, we're not necessarily saying that membership is by means of race. Really, membership is by means of people of all race and ethnical backgrounds who want to participate in a church where where they will meet the needs of other people, both blacks and white. So even though it might sound somewhat racist, it is not at all racist at all, but it's primarily concerned with meeting the needs of black people in the world, not just in the United States. And these gentlemen presented a fine expose of what the black church is all about and gave us a lot of bibliographies or reading materials, and primarily what they're doing in the St. Louis area in their churches in order to meet the needs of the Black community in all aspects of our society. Then the second conference that day is was the National Political Picture in 76.
Yes.
And there the speakers were Alfonso Jackson, who's the Assistant Professor, Administrator of Justice, and Executive Director at the University of Missouri, as well as Sandra Williams, who is a training specialist of Urban Training Center in Metro St. Louis. It was basically a session where they foresaw the election of 1976 with seeing more Blacks in running for offices and also getting elected to offices, particularly more Black women in offices. As you well know, or I'm sure people will know, that the Congress at the present time has 17 Black state reps, U.S. representatives in Congress, and one senator in the person of Senator Brooks from Massachusetts. It is felt by these people that both of these bodies in the Congress would probably increase, with possibly two new senators, but at least one, and even more, like around 15 or so more Black representatives in the United States Congress. So their outlook of the political picture in 1976 looked very prosperous. Even Alfonso Jackson made the prediction, or was looking at it, or made the comment that he even foresaw a strong Black vice presidential candidate. He was not ruling or ready to name any particular person.
Did Julian Bond's name?
One of the questions from the audience came, was Julian Bond the candidate? And he said, well, he's a strong contention, but he would not say that he would be the only one who would be a strong contention for this. He also named some of the mayors of Newark, New Jersey, whose name slips my mind at the present time. And also the mayor of Los Angeles, Mayor Bradley, as strong possible vice presidential candidates.
Perhaps Gibson?
Yes, that was Gibson was the mayor's name in Newark, New Jersey. So it was felt by him that we would also see a strong Black candidacy coming up in the 76 elections, as well as increases in both houses of the United States Congress.
Jim, if we could just sort of back to the Black church in America. You just talked about the political picture, especially from your viewpoint as a vicar, you're preparing to enter into the Lutheran pastorate. Did you sense anything political in the presentation of the Black church in America, or did the gospel come out loud and clear? What would you say?
I'd say the gospel came out loud and clear in that presentation. And I think a gospel that is primarily concerned with helping people. Mm-hmm. You know, as I believe I have been taught, and I'm sure these gentlemen even reinforced it to me, that Jesus Christ did not come to save the righteous, but he came to save the sinner. And any time that he came to minister to the oppressed rather than to minister to those who are oppressing people, and the church, any time that the church lose sight of that and does not help its fellow man who really need the gospel, and not just the word, but as well as physical need, then the church is not really doing its task. And that was primarily what these gentlemen brought out over and over again, that as ministers, our calling is to meet the needs of the people who really need those needs, and doing everything that we can to help these people. There was interesting criteria laid out for us about the at least by Reverend Benjamin Carroll, which I thought was kind of neat, and that was he drew a circle on the bulletin board, and right on the chalkboard, and he said, "This is the world, and we're all sinners."
Yes.
But there's two classified of sinners, and he drew a line in between.
Right.
He said, "On the one side, there's the righteous sinner."
Yes.
Who will try to put himself above everyone else, and he just, biblically, that's well documented in the scribes and the Pharisees.
Right.
But then you have the quote, the Just a Normal Sinner, who was the publican in the...
knows he's a sinner.
Yeah, right, knows he's a sinner and does not deserve God's mercy. But then he said, well, who did Jesus come to minister to? He did not come to the righteous because they knew that, they felt they knew that they could justify themselves. Right. But they came to the publican, the one who knew he was a sinner and needed the mercy from God. And he says that's what the black church's primary purpose is, to ever keep us ever mindful that we need to always minister to the ones who want ministry, to the sinner in the world. Some questions in the questions and answer period about the black church came up about some concerns about some of the black literature that has come up, such as Black Theology, Black Power by James Cone,
yes,
and Deodis Roberts' book on dealing with black theology. The answer was not came from this did not come from the speaker, but it came from one, again, from another participant who I name slips my memory now. But the question was basically, if the black church, if you will read James Cone's book, is primarily saying that as a black person, we must strive to get ourselves to a point where we have power.
Yeah.
That's where it stops. It just stops you right there. It says, well, his premise of that book is that we work ourselves so that we will get ourselves into a position where we are in a position of power in the church.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't really go beyond, well, what do you do once you attain that? He just says, well, we'll worry about that when we get to it. And the fear, I guess, of most whites is that, well, all you're telling me is that you want to be number one, and I'm going to be now the the one who is the oppressor. And
reversal roles, in other words. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And this gentleman made the comment and said, well, if that was to happen, I guarantee I would be on the other side of the oppressor, or with the oppressee, because I am always, whether he's white or black, I am always with the person who needs me. And once, if a black ever got into that position, which he seriously doubted, but if he ever got to that position where he did have some power and was being just as corrupt as what he had been fighting, he would jump on the other side immediately with no questions to fight against that type of tyranny, which is kind of interesting to me, because that's where I always felt that if that was to happen, I would probably do the same thing, be with the people who need me the most, and that would probably be the oppressed people, whether it be black or white. You know, we talk about oppressed people, we're not talking about one segment of society. You know, I guess we're all are oppressed in the present economy conditions in this country.
Yes, yeah.
That's one thing about the civil rights movement. It started off with a group of people, both black and white, whites primarily saying, I'm going to identify with you, even though I'm financially and mentally and educationally I'm not with you, but at least I'm going to identify with you.
Right.
And we're going to fight for your human rights. Today, the economy is affected where everybody is feeling the crunch, and the dollar just doesn't buy as much. And more whites are falling into the poverty level.
Mm-hmm.
And it's no longer becoming a race thing where blacks are fighting for equal jobs, equal employment,
right,
and that type of thing. But there's a considerable number of whites who are in that same
hitting so many of us together, right?
Financially. And as more blacks jump into the middle class, the latest statistic is that 51% of the black population now is in middle class.
Mm-hmm.
They are falling into the same traps as the system wants them to fall into, and are losing their commitment to the black community. And it's up for ministers, as well as all of us, to keep us ever mindful that just because we made it doesn't mean that we can't help other people make it.
Right. In all that you said so far, Jim, I haven't heard the word integration. That used to be quite a key word some years ago. And if I see the picture clearly myself, it seems to me now the push is more on the... that we all have our self-respect, regardless of our color or race, and that we
do what we can to help one another in our human situation. Would you say that's more sizing up than striving for some kind of artificial integration? Or
I'm not a believer in integration, and I say that knowing quite well what it means. First of all, I'm sure a lot of people might say, well, or have a different interpretation of integration. My interpretation of integration means that when you integrate something, you're integrating into a culture, but you cannot retain any of your own cultural heritage, background.
Your individuality.
Right, individuality and cultural background. And I'm not in favor of that at all. I am in favor of reaffirming people and their diversities. That as a black, you shall retain your culture and your heritage just as you as a German or anyone else, as a Polish person or Swedish or what have you, will retain your individuality. And that we live together in reaffirming our diversiveness. The Bible speaks about that, where in, I believe it's Corinthians chapter 12, the first, where Jesus is talking about he being the head of the church.
Okay.
Rather, Paul's talking about this, but Jesus Christ is the head of the church. And that the eye cannot hear, the nose cannot eat and what have you, but the hand cannot walk or what have you. But they're all under one body, and the head being Jesus Christ is its leader. And we all need our fingers, our hands, our eyes, and what have you.
Right.
And that we should glorify our diversities, but glorify them together as we work for the building of the kingdom of Jesus Christ.
Right.
And so that's where a lot of the big push is not integration per se, but it's in reaffirming people and their diversities.
In their humanity.
In their humanity.
Yes, in their essential humanity.
Right.
Well, of course, what you say is certainly from the Christian perspective. And I suppose this particular conference is not necessarily set up as a Christian conference, more a general theme, Negro History Week.
Right.
But would you say that you saw some of these emphases coming out in the conference so far?
Yes, I would say there is a strong Christian emphasis. In fact, the title of the convention was The Tie That Binds.
Yes.
And it has, well, Blessed Be the Tie That Binds is in our Lutheran hymnal as well as in other hymnals. You know, black folks are very much involved in religion, in their theology. It reflects them more, I guess, than any other culture, because it was the church that has kept them together as a community. I think without it, we would have been desolated long ago. But it is the church, and it reflects us in every aspect of our lives. There is very little diversity between, or very little to separation between secular and sacred. It's all one for us.
Yes. Well, I'm looking down here, and it says Black Presence in Art was the institute in the evening on Monday? Afternoon, yes.
Yeah, it was in the afternoon. Now, that was a very interesting presentation because it brought something to me which I was not aware of. The St. Louis Art Museum has been granted several foundations or monies from foundations to assemble an art display with emphasis on black artists. And this display has been in existence now for, 3 years, but has not really been taken advantage of by many people in the community. They have, made inroads into the schools and inroads into some community organizations, but for the most part it has been untouched. And they have even assembled a packet which can be purchased for $5, which contains some 30 or 40 slides of black artists, paintings, sculptures, and other artifacts that are on display at the museum, as well as some explanation of these displays.